Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Female graduates now account for 60% of U.S. bachelor's degree holders. Young men both enter college at a lower rate than women and drop out more often. Boys now get lower grades than girls in high school and middle school and report liking school less. You don't have to tell all this to Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He sees it all the time. In fact, he's back today to discuss what's going wrong with boys these days and offer some advice on how parents can use the lessons of the feminist movement, yes, I said the feminist movement, to get boys on a path to success early in life. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a board-certified family psychologist. He writes the weekly Double Take Advice column for teens and parents in the Lawrence Journal World. He's the author of the Dear Dr. Wes series of books for teens and parents and A Guide to Successful Living with ADHD coming out in May. That book is titled I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not. And Wes, always good to have you. Welcome back.
Always nice to be back, Steve.
And also here is Noah. He's a college student who graduated from Lawrence High School. He now attends KU with the intention to double major in English and education to become a high school English teacher. And Noah, nice to have you back too.
Thank you very much.
Well, Wes, what do you think the main problem is with this behavior of young men today? Because you're saying it's a very, very big issue.
I think it's really complicated and probably a little frustrating for those of us who have sons, as you and I do.
Boy, because don't we ever.
We're trying to keep up with the change in culture as it's slipping right beneath our feet like the sands on the shore.
Yeah.
And I think that I have kind of a core theory about this, and we'll talk more about it through the show. But girls are taught, as the daughters of feminism, to be scrappers. We've told them for years, you're always going to be put down. You're always going to have to rise up against oppression. And as one of my young women I was debating this with the other day turns to me and says, wait a minute, you're telling me oppression is good? And I said, think about it.
It has an upside, you're saying.
It does, yeah. Because it forces you to get up and do the hard work. The message we're giving boys is different than that. I'm still trying to sort of figure out what that message is, but it doesn't seem to have much to do with scrapping to get ahead.
Well, so what do you think the message is, though? What are you referring to? This notion, I think I've heard you say that there's a notion of entitlement out there, yeah, that boys seem to hang on to.
Well, the whole millennial generation has been saddled with this idea that they have this sense of entitlement that comes really from, you know, 50, 60 years post-World War II of economic strength or a lot of free credit, which we saw over the last 20 or 30 years. And they have been given great privileges. I mean, which kid does not have an iPhone or an Android right now? Mm-hmm. We buy cars for kids. We do all sorts of things and believe that that is furthering their lives. And I think for boys who are being brought up in a tradition of being the dominant gender in, yeah, society, they don't give a second thought to that. They sort of think that the gifts are going to rain down from heaven for the rest of their lives. It doesn't teach them to get up and work really hard for that.
Well, Noah, no pressure on you. You're here representing the entire male species from here to Topeka and across to Jeff City, and we're glad to have you here today. But what do you think the issue is? Are you noticing the same trends that Dr. Wes is talking about here, and what are you noticing out there?
Absolutely. I notice with a lot of people my age, it is pretty much in a sense of entitlement. And I guess part of it is how we decide to carry ourselves. Another part of it would be how we're raised. Because there isn't a whole lot, and I talked about this last time I was here too, of self-responsibility. And, I mean, if we're not accountable for our actions, then, you know, we try once, we fail, you know, may as well not get up and try again.
You're seeing that out there.
Oh, definitely.
And the sense of entitlement is coming from what? I mean, parents just not pushing their boys hard enough, or what are you seeing? Because you're making me nervous now as a father of two boys.
That's thinking, always my goal when I come on the show,
Steve. Where am I going here? Yeah.
Well, let's see here. It's kind of tough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, this sense of you're saying, are you think parents aren't pushing their boys hard enough? No, or what are you seeing out there?
It could very well be that it's, I mean, there is kind of pushing your child to do a good job, but at the same time, there isn't a lot of reinforcement of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I notice with parents too, it's kind of, they make sure their child tries, but there isn't any tenacity there.
Huh.
It's just one and done.
There was a good,
good story
this morning on Morning Edition that people can catch online.
About grit.
About grit.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Go ahead. I cut you off.
No,
tell us about
that's
that.
The story. And I have a different way of saying it, although this, there's some research that's supporting it. I always say that the game does not go to the smart people. It goes to the tenacious people.
Boy, and, isn't that the truth.
Yes. And we're teaching girls to be tenacious as a matter of survival. And I think we're teaching boys that that isn't necessary. And we see this. I was actually kind of shocked when I started researching this column to see that it was a 60-40 split now.
And in graduation
from college. And one of the things, Fortune Magazine's the one that ran that article late last year, and they see some economic theory behind this. I don't know that I agree, but they're claiming that boys reach a certain debt level and get uncomfortable and drop out and go into the workforce, whereas girls will press on even if their debt is higher. That may be true, but I don't think that explains it. If you really look at tenacity, the girls are the ones willing to throw down in that situation and say, I'm going to risk the money of the future to get somewhere. The boys are saying, I don't know if I really can do this.
Well, Wes, this is a heck of an indictment of this generation of parents, if indeed we are guilty of raising a generation of boys who are lacking tenacity, to use, you know, your words. That ain't good, is it?
Well, I think it is not good. And
yeah.
I think there are probably a number of things we've discussed on the show before that when you put them all together add to the picture.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is, and I have video games in my home, let me say up front. But I've said before on our tech shows, one has to teach kids from the first 22 seconds that those things come out of the box that all technology that's not for education is like dessert.
Mm-hmm.
We don't all eat chocolate pie for dinner. That's what you get if you eat a good, healthy meal.
Mm-hmm.
And that is true for video gaming. I certainly know people, and Noah, I'd be interested in your thoughts about your peer group. I know kids who spend hours and hours and hours a day after school online video gaming with the little headsets on. They talk to people all around the world, and they're all on the team. And I think that's neat. As a game, that's fun to meet people that you're, you know, from the Ukraine live and in person on your headset, but it's not moving people forward. It's fun.
Mm. Let me get our listeners involved here. Do you share this concern that we may be raising a generation of boys who lack tenacity? What explains in your mind this difference in graduation rates between women and men? 60% of U.S. bachelor's degree holders now are women, men dropping out of college at a far faster clip than women. What accounts for all this? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also email us to uptodate@kcur.org, or you can tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. Noah, this lack of tenacity, do you see it among your male peers? Again, we're talking in generalities here, but that's a pretty concerning statement to a lot of people.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, I just kind of feel like it's the way we're raised too, because the way my mother raised me, it was, you know, if you get knocked down on the ground, get back up and dust yourself off. But it seems with most people, we're just coddled to the point where if something, you know, bad happens, or if you make a wrong decision, then you just deal with it and move on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, not really even move on. You just kind of sit there.
Yeah. Or collapse in a heap.
Yeah.
Yeah, that too.
See, your mom could be pretty tough, it sounds like.
I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely for the better. I'm not, you know, ragging on her or anything.
Because she's listening.
I was just going to say, is mom out there listening right now? Yeah. But she could bring it when she had to, it sounds like.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And where did that come from in her life? I mean, why did she do that? Any theories?
I'm not too terribly sure.
The way she was raised, or?
That's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what you think. She was pushed hard as a kid, and maybe she brought that home to you a little bit too.
Definitely. And just certain, I guess, moral values too. that are being brought up because, as what you gentlemen were saying, you know, how like everybody has, you know, an iPhone or an Android phone, even at, you know, the age of six.
Yeah.
And there's nothing evil about iPhones.
No.
I have one. And my kids both have an iPad. But, for example, we filter what goes through that thing. Yeah. Parents are always surprised when they come in and their child is downloading pornography on their iPhone. And so kids not only have this sense of entitlement to the devices, but they have a sense of entitlement to all the information out there. And parents aren't as advanced as they should be about filtering and limiting the expenditures and the information flow.
The differences between men and boys, boys and girls, is our conversation today. 816-235-2888. Let's go to some calls here. And Brent from Kansas City, Missouri. Brent, you're on Up to Date.
Good morning. I think part of the problem is that we've almost made it a bad thing to be a competitive, aggressive male. We almost want to emasculate the male gender to make everything equal and nice. And I don't live on a planet where everything's equal and nice, and you have to be competitive. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, competition is everything, but sports, you know, everybody gets to play equal times, everybody gets a trophy. You have to learn how to lose. Yeah. You have to learn how you're not going to be number one. And we make everything so special. I mean, I have two small children, and I don't recall graduating from every grade. we propagate weakness as well. And I don't mean that in a macho sense of the term, but nobody's accountable.
Well, what Brent just said really strikes home with me. That one phrase, Brent, where you say everybody gets a trophy. When I was a kid, by George, not everybody got a trophy. But these days, my kids' generation, you're right, Brent, everybody gets a trophy.
Well, that's definitely go back and listen to that Grit story this morning because they're making exactly the same point. They talk about you have to hit the wall in order to learn how to get up and do what needs to be done. I'll tell you where I think a lot of this came from, and I will be talking about this in my new book in May a little bit. We have this culture of self-esteem, and I think self-esteem as a concept came out of some social science, social psychology literature, and it got everybody excited because who doesn't want to have self-esteem, this idea that you have great worth? Well, the problem is that as a psychological concept, self-efficacy is a much better concept. This comes out of the work of Albert Bandura.
The difference meaning what? Mm-hmm. Explain that to people, Wes.
Good. Critical difference, Steve. Self-esteem is just sort of this illusory idea that you're worth something. Self-efficacy is the belief that you can do something. Huh. And if you believe that you can do something, this is what my late professor Snyder at KU wrote about hope. You've had Shane on here doing Lopez, Shane Lopez, and his book about hope. And their argument there is that you see the plan and that you have the will to do it. That's hope or self-efficacy. And we focus too much on just building up people's love of themselves, which is really kind of narcissistic ultimately if you think about it, instead of building up people's belief in struggle.
Have to have a certain amount of self-esteem, Wes, before you can get to the self-efficacy part of that?
It goes the other way. If you believe that you can do something and you strive for it and maybe you succeed, maybe you fail, self-esteem doesn't come from being told you're a winner or being told that you're right. It comes from being successful or learning how to fail and stand up and do it again. Hmm. And then you begin to value yourself because you feel that you are able to operate in whatever environment you're in. And unfortunately, instead, we give everybody a trophy and say, don't you feel good about yourself now?
Yeah.
And there's
It's earned or not. Yeah. Exactly. Brent, any other thoughts? Because you made some good ones here.
Well, yeah. And along those lines of what you all were just speaking about, this is only anecdotal and maybe very far-fetched, but I kind of see this as leading to more bullying, to people, you know, mass shootings, rights, things like that, because you have people that feel that they deserve everything. And nobody really, I'm not saying go to a caste system, but not everyone is equal. People are better at, everyone is better at something than someone else. And we don't equip children to know what they're good at. We make them think they can be good at everything. And I don't raise my children to say, oh, honey, you're the best at that. It's like, well, yeah, you did a good job. You know, maybe something else you might be better at.
Yeah.
Don't worry that you didn't win.
Let me tell you, a subtle example of that is too easily we say to kids, oh, you did such a good job. Your picture is so pretty. Why not say instead, wow, I love your effort. You really worked hard on that. You've tried a whole bunch of new things with your picture or your car or your friends. Rewarding effort and supporting people when they're struggling is always going to work better. And I think we do that better with girls in this society than we do boys.
Brent, I sure appreciate the call. He also made the point about the connection between all of this and bullying. That makes sense?
The sense of entitlement is common amongst the bullies. But the problem is bullying is such a multivariate equation that it's hard to pin. One tries to see it in the research and everywhere else, try to pin down what causes bullying. But I wouldn't disagree that a sense of entitlement is a big part of it. You owe me something, so pay up. And that's not a good position for anybody to be in. It's not ethical or empathic.
The differences between boys and girls and why boys are struggling, that's what we're talking about here. Manuel from Raytown. Manuel, you're on Up to Date with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Good morning.
Good morning. I had just a quick comment. Like, I graduated last year, and actually, Steve, you spoke at my graduation ceremony.
Oh, great, great.
And I bet it was a changing moment in your life, wasn't it?
It was. Actually, yeah, graduating in general was. But I got two science degrees, and they were fairly tough to get through. I mean,
graduating from UMKC, Manuel, is what we're talking about here, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And I also had a comment, but like in the science and engineering, I'm still seeing most of the people in there are males. It's still very male dominated, at least there. But like I did notice in the dental and medical schools that's mostly females.
Do you know what your ratio was? Do you know what the ratio was in your engineering school? Do you remember? Because that's an interesting point.
Yeah, it was at the engineering school. I think the engineering department was definitely far more male. The overall science, like the chemistry department, was almost 50-50, I think. I don't know exact.
I think it varies by the branch. Chemical engineering, I'd have to look at the statistics, but women have been making real strides in chemical engineering in the last few years. But you're right. Engineering is one of the last fields that still is primarily male. Medical, all the things you mentioned are moving more towards women. In fact, if you're a guy in a lot of those fields, psychology is another one, you're a minority candidate and probably would be subject to affirmative action, not officially, but that they would be looking for a diverse group of people by looking for men.
I gotcha. Oh, one more quick comment about video games. Video games have taught me how to fail. I maybe it's because I play some really hard ones.
So many jokes.
You get stuck at a spot and you die 500 times by the boss. It's like, and then you finally win. It feels really awesome. You know, it's like, yes, I accomplished something. But
I think they are a great learning tool. If they weren't, the U.S. military wouldn't spend so much money on them. But the thing is, you must have found the way to do first what is important to succeed because you graduated with difficult degrees. And that's the takeaway on that.
I did ignore my video games for a solid year and a half.
Wow. Good for you, Manuel. Good for you. Hey, I'm glad you called. Yeah, thanks very much.
Thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Congratulations.
Yeah, absolutely. Lori from Kansas City, Kansas. Lori, you're on Up to Date.
Hi. I was just, I don't know. So I have a son. He doesn't go to school in KCK, but he goes to another school district. And he is allowed to turn in late work forever. He can retake tests as many times as he wants. There's no pressure on him to do well on anything the first time. And I've brought it up to the administrators, and they keep saying that current research says that kids should have any amount of time to learn anything they want. But I think it's a horrible lesson that we're teaching our sons and daughters that they can have endless amounts to do anything. So when they get to college, they're not prepared because they're so used to being able to redo things and redo things, and it doesn't work that way in college.
Well, you bring up a fine point, and it is a double-edged sword. So for people who do not have some kind of accommodation, like kids with ADD or anxiety or something, then I would agree with you that deadlines are crucial. And if I had a dollar for every college student I see who has not learned that lesson very well, we would all order pizza for everyone in the station and half the listeners. It is a real problem, what you're describing. Now, the fundamental dilemma of parenting is essentially the same dilemma as for teaching, and that is how much do you push kids and how much do you hold them? How much do you support them? How much do you demand of them? And your school is resolving that with a lot more holding. And while that may get kids through in the short run, I would agree with you that in the long run that's a problem. If I were you, I would hold my kids' feet to the fire.
I don't allow my son to do it. But what I do notice is that 75% of the people in the school district's kids are on the honor roll. And I know that 75% of these students just looking at are not A and B students, just looking at his friends. I mean, there's no way. And I don't think it's good at what we're doing for a society. And this has been going on in his school district, I don't know, for 10 years for what I know. So now you're going to start having generations, and it's just going to compound itself. But the administration doesn't want to listen to the teachers because I think the teachers are very supportive, but their hands are tied because the superintendents and assistant superintendents and the curriculum directors are the ones who are driving this. This isn't coming from a teacher point of view. This is coming from people who aren't in the classroom driving this instruction to give kids endless amount of time to do anything any type of deadlines.
Next month, our show is going to be about how to bring kids into an economy, and we're going to talk a lot about not giving kids anything. I don't get anything for free. I had to pay for parking today. So we have to.
Here you are on the show, too.
Yeah, really?
We got to rectify that, don't we?
Yeah. So with both an economy, a literal economy, and then the economy of ideas and experiences with kids, we have to teach them that you get what you earn. And I think you're on a good path to that. Unfortunately, your school may be a little short-sighted in the long run.
Yes. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, Laura, I'm glad you called. Great points.
Great show.
Yeah.
All right, bye.
Are we coddling our boys? Why are girls graduating college at higher rates than boys? Why are boys dropping out more often than girls are? What's the issue out there, folks? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Before a break, Wes, you're saying you want to take this analogy to feminism farther by suggesting that we need to go back and start teaching boys to believe they aren't going to get anything they don't earn. And are they more susceptible to a sense of entitlement than girls, and sort of addressing that question head on? That's where the whole feminist movement idea comes from that you're advocating here.
Exactly. If you go back, I was am a great fan of the show Masters of Sex. It is so good, not just because it documents Masters and Johnson's foray into sex research, but it reminds us of how women were treated in the late 50s and early 60s. And I was born during the Cuban Missile Crisis, so that tells you my age. So I don't remember that as much firsthand, but I grew up in the feminist movement. And I think that lots of young women don't realize today how much they are daughters of that movement and granddaughters of that movement, how much effect it's had on them.
Yeah.
And what basically people told women was, you are oppressed and you have to get up and change that. You have to break through the glass ceilings. You have to demand that you are going to be treated equally. You need to demand an equal wage and so on and so on. You're going to have to earn this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the message we need to start giving boys. We don't have to call it a masculinist movement or anything. We just need
to. Oh, why not?
Well,
let's do it.
We'll coin the phrase right here. You know, one guy said something about the Tea Party, and all of a sudden it existed. So yeah. Who knows what we can start. But I think we've got to really say this is – it's your job to earn everything you get. That's what I tell my little boy every day when he goes and cleans my office, and he earns it.
Noah, can you tell amongst your own peer group the number of kids who are, you know, have gone on to college and are hanging with it? Are there more women than men, or what have you noticed among your own friends out there?
Amongst my own friends, I've noticed actually more of my male friends are going to college, and I think I may just be an exception. But as far as the general trend, it seems to me is probably about a 60-40 split.
That more men are going to college than women.
My bad. More women are going to college than men.
Ah, okay. Just as you're looking around, that's what you're noticing then.
That's correct.
In your own classes, you're seeing more women than men these days?
For the most part.
Boy, that's really interesting. 816-235-2888. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about the differences between boys and girls, and are we coddling our boys just too much? I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our conversation about a local robotics contest or our look at the Nelson Atkins Labyrinth, you can find those at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk with a KU professor about why the Ukraine seems to be torn between East and West as it deals with Russia's recent incursion. This hour, we're talking about the differences between boys and girls and why boys are suddenly struggling more than girls seem to be both in high school and in college. We're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's a board-certified family psychologist. He's joined by Noah, a college student at KU who graduated from Lawrence High School and is offering us his perspective. Our number here again, 816-235-2888. Wes, you think this notion of where you're seeing differences between men and women, boys and girls, is extending beyond simply just academics as well. What do you mean?
Well, I have about a 80-20 split on my caseload over the years, women to men. So I hear a lot of
way more women than
men.
Really?
Yeah. And that's just probably kind of who I see. Probably maybe 75-25 at this point. So I hear a lot of complaints about young men. Mm-hmm. And this seems to come from a broad spectrum of young women of all socioeconomic backgrounds, of all academic backgrounds in high school and college, even in up into their 30s. And increasingly the complaints go along with the same issue of entitlement. And young men, we talk about them not wanting to commit to college or commit to work or whatever it may be. They're very much not interested in committing to relationships right now. And I actually toyed with the idea of having a couple of young women on to talk about this, but I actually thought that might get even a little hostile.
Really?
We may risk it at some point. I think that the young women are in a position of being fairly angry right now and not knowing what they want to do about that, not having a response to that.
This lack of commitment on young men's part, does that have to do with what we're talking about here today? This
I think
notion
it all
of
goes
their,
together.
Yeah,
yes.
In what way?
I think that they are caught up in not having to have obligation. The idea of a relationship is to have an obligation. You say, I'm going to choose to be with this one person. And in economic theory, there's an opportunity cost that comes with that, and that is to be more broadly in dating relationships. And there's always been the where do we stand conversation as long as you and I have been around. Today, that where do we stand conversation is answered by something like, well, I don't like to put a label on things, or why do we have to call it something? And that is – there are plenty of girls that are okay with that idea, but a lot of them don't feel like they're developing toward any kind of longer-term dating pattern, longer-term relationship pattern, and they get pretty frustrated with that. And there are kind of two versions of this. One is the one where a guy tells up front, I don't do relationships, I'm not interested in that. And a lot of young women will go along with that under the false theory that eventually the guy will come around. Mm-hmm. Then there's the guys who aren't very clear even in their what I call informed consent. They're not really saying I don't do relationships up front, but then they end up not doing them. And I think it all comes from that same idea that we're not really teaching young men sometimes to be ethical and empathic toward others.
You know, Noah, you're an exception to this rule with your own relationship just because you've been on the show in the past talking about it. But are you seeing that, again, that trend among your male peers as well, this notion that so many of them are unwilling to commit to a relationship to any extent, I guess, with any duration attached to it?
Absolutely. From my closest friends group, I have a couple friends that will dedicate themselves to one thing, but nothing else at all. And they fixate on this one thing. And it's really interesting because I've been in a relationship for almost 3 years now. It'll be 3 years in May. And I'm the only one of my friends that is.
Really?
Yeah. It's
so you're unusual, at least in that regard.
I suppose
maybe
so.
Maybe in many regards, but who knows about the rest of it, right?
True.
Yeah. Maybe your mom should call us right now and fill us in on the rest of it, right?
Please, okay. No.
But again, you're not seeing many of your buddies who are willing to go down that road to any extent at all.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it doesn't even have to be relationships. They just don't commit to anything. And I find it to be really peculiar.
That's really interesting.
Well, and it's not like everybody needs to get married at 19 or something. But I used to tell young women in their teen years that just hang in there. Guys will mature and be ready to do this in their mid-20s. And I have an increasing number of young women in their mid-20s now who tap their watch and say, when was that going to start?
Yeah, where are they?
Yeah.
Well, how much of this phenomenon that we're talking about here, Wes, maybe has to do with sort of the rise of women over the years in the wake of the women's movement, you know, the more equality in our society? You know, is it really so much that men are failing as much as women are just sort of asserting themselves and taking what's rightfully theirs after generations of this equality fight we've seen waged out in society writ large here?
Yeah. Well, I think social science research is always tricky because you can't go back in a time machine and ask the people of the 50s or 60s the same questions you ask the people of today. Mm-hmm. And retrospective analysis is really, you know, questionable memory. But I do think boys have fallen back some as girls have moved forward. It's almost a perfect storm there.
Wow. Yeah.
It really is.
Lots of phone calls here. Let's go to some of them now. Let's go to Keenan from Kansas City, Kansas. Keenan, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I'm wondering. I'm sort of sensing some transparency. That is that members of particular demographic groups never actually think of themselves as part of that demographic group. It's just transparent to them. And I'm wondering, is some of this just, you know, which boys are you speaking of? Are you, and I have to assume that the fact that you've never mentioned the particular demographic group of these boys, that they're white young men. And if that's the case, white young men from where I sit, they've always had the sense of entitlement, and you see it every day when you go any place. And I'm just thinking that it's just part of the institutional racism that exists as part of this culture, period. And of course, young white women have been told that they have to scrap for themselves. The same thing has been said for, young black women and young Latin women as well. And, you know, I don't see some sense of entitlement for any young African-American male. If anything, you can go someplace as an African-American male and you would instantly be seen as a threat or a potential threat.
Okay. So, mm-hmm. I appreciate that, Keenan. So
I think
that's talking about, Wes?
A great point. Mm-hmm. And I think that if you're looking at young white men from any minority or oppressed culture, whether it's women or African Americans or Latinos, it's very easy to see what the caller is talking about and not see it as a new phenomenon. It's a historic phenomenon. It dates back hundreds of years through colonialism and so forth. I would say that today it is not working out very well mm-hmm. for those same individuals. And I think we're going to have to teach them to scrap and to not assume they are the dominant culture, or else they're going to disappear as a dominant culture. And, you know, as the caller is pointing out, that might not be such a bad thing.
Keaton, thank you for the phone call. Appreciate it. Mike from Overland Park. Mike, you're on Up to Date with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Good morning.
Good morning. I find it interesting, especially on some of the comments. My daughter is 24, and she has a favorite phrase that she uses with some of her friends around some of the young men that either they date or they meet, and that is, not your maid, not your mama.
That's cleaner than what I thought you were going to say.
That's a good one, though, Mike.
Well, I think she cleans it up for Dad.
Yeah.
But the thing that I find interesting is that girls have been raised that they can do anything, where the young guys are raised where they can do anything and escape either into the world of sports or gaming. And I listened to the young women speak about how much time young men devote to the unrealities, whether it's fantasy football or their gaming communities. And in one of your prior callers said he actually had to make this sacrifice of giving up his gaming for a year, yeah, as if this was an epiphany, which is sort of the mindset that the young women are facing, and that is, what part of reality don't you get? And that leads to the not your maid, not your mama. Whereas the girls know that if they want it, they got to go get it. And there's this dichotomy that these guys don't even understand, that they're not only not taken seriously, but they're not even coming to young women with what I'll call the table stakes of a relationship in the maturity. And when I look at young men, there seems to be at age 21 probably a 2-3 even a 4-year maturity level over what I'll call the historic norms, that a 21, 22-year-old young woman is about on a her chronologic peer on the young man side or the little boy side is only about 16 or 17 years old in terms of the maturity that he brings to sharing in a relationship. So just a comment from a father of a young woman.
I don't know what you do for a living, but it parallels your experience parallels mine in many ways. I'll tell you one of the oddest things I've seen, and I cannot prove this statistically, but I have had more complaints in the last 4 or 5 years from young women who complain that their 20, 21-year-old boyfriend doesn't want to have sex with them anymore than I have ever had prior.
And what's that about?
I would argue that is about video games and just what the caller is talking about, entering into fantasy life. I am not a gamer. I just never get interested long enough in them. I have books to write and kids to play with and stuff.
You're making me think I need to spend more time with gaming, Wes. What you're selling this here today. Yeah. I've missed this part of life here.
I think the gaming fulfills somewhat of the same desires. And so they just do not have as much sexual energy that they want to put into a conjoint sexual experience. Now, again, is that broad or wide-ranging? Maybe not. But when I track back that complaint, because I do a lot of sex therapy too, that seems to be a big part of it, and not in an age range or a length of relationship that you would expect to begin to see some of that happening.
Noah, does that make any sense to you, what Wes just said? I mean, Wes doesn't make a lot of sense a lot of times, but that time, did he make sense by any chance or not?
That kind of struck a chord with me because from what I see in my life, that happens so much. And while I was going on earlier about my friends not devoting to anything, the one thing they will devote themselves to, video games. And that takes precedent over going outside, going to, hang out with friends or exercise, going on dates, and it is just the number one thing. So when Wes said that, it just clicked in my mind.
And I know girls that like to game, but they don't do it in that level of intensity that necessarily takes them away from other things, except for a minority.
God, this is interesting. Mike, I'm really glad you called. That opened up a whole interesting set of comments here. Again, we're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw and his friend Noah. We're talking this morning about the differences between men and women. Why are women graduating college at higher rates than men? Why are men dropping out at higher rates than women? Have we coddled our young boys too much? 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us at KCUR up to date. Let's go to Susan from Kansas City, Missouri. Susan, good morning.
Good morning. I'm interested in hearing your visitors speak about the parallels and divergences between self-efficacy and resiliency.
Yeah.
And then, let's see, I've got a kind of a backup question, too. But I'll go with that to begin with. I'm trying to drive while I talk. So
self-efficacy and resiliency. Yeah. Well, I'll keep you on hold here, Susan.
Who are the people I would read about resiliency? You mentioned Bandura in self-efficacy.
That goes.
So mention something about who would be a go-to reader for resiliency.
Yeah, that goes back a number of years. Go back and find in the archive Steve's interview with Shane Lopez. He is a graduate of KU, as am I, and both of us studied with Rick C.R. Snyder, who developed the HOPE theory, the idea of the will and the ways, and that people develop and are more successful when they have a hopeful perspective, and he operationalized hope. Resiliency goes along with that because people story this morning on Morning Edition, the idea that grit, this sense of persistence and patience and tenacity create a more resilient child, one who can fall down and get back up again. To literally give you the example, you'll see on the playground with little kids, the child will fall down on the playground, and there are two responses a parent can make. One is to stand up and slowly walk across the playground and check on the child and slowly walk back. Now, by my estimation, that's the correct response. The other response you see too frequently is the child falls down and the parent takes off like a missile across the playground, scoops the child up, and of course, in doing so, scares the crap out of the child because they didn't know it was this bad.
Mm-hmm.
Now maybe an ambulance needs to be called. Mm-hmm. And this is the very early beginning of teaching kids they're fragile, is if you go over and say, I think you're okay. The other day, my son was working. He's 10. He's working on remodeling with me. And I'm almost scared to tell this story. I thought the power was off. And it's a different circuit. And I realized it was on, and I said, my gosh, Alex, watch out. I need to turn that power off. He goes, I already got hit a few minutes ago. And he never said a word. And, of course, I'm horrified by this. I go turn off the power. But that he's not very freaked out if he gets hurt in a situation like that. He's pretty resilient mm-hmm. to those kind of things. He also got a cut I didn't see the other day. Now, I'm not telling you go out and zap your kids and cut them to make them strong, but that comes from years of not over-responding to those little hurts. The same applies in school, in relationships, in college. If we expect kids to be resilient, if we ask them to be resilient, if we don't over-respond to their failures and boo-boos, they will learn to not over-respond to them too.
Susan, I appreciate your phone call. All right.
I hope she didn't drive off the road with that.
Yeah, I hope not. Lots of email here as well. Sarah writes us this. You seem to be forgetting wage disparity between men and women. Mm-hmm. As a parent of a soon-to-be graduating high school senior, I'm continually telling her that she needs a degree to make decent money. That's the message girls are getting. It's not as simple as taking power from males. That's making it black, white, with no gray area, she says. Angela in Kansas City writes us this. We have been promoting aggression and competition for the entire history of our nation. What if the whole paradigm switches? Doing things differently might be a good thing in the future. If the workforce and society doesn't fit the changing generation, maybe the generation will change those things and it won't necessarily be a bad thing. This is interesting from Catherine and Lee Summit, who writes, I'm an African-American single mother of three sons for 10 years. I think part of this is cultural. I've always told my sons that they have to be better than their Caucasian counterparts to be considered equal because they are big, tall, and athletic, black males. I've never allowed them to think they are less than anyone else. Consequently, I have three scholar athletes, one of whom will be attending the U.S. Naval Academy in the fall. I've made it very clear to my sons that white male privilege does not apply to them. I think what's happening with some of the boys that you are speaking of may be a remnant of white male privilege in our society. Interesting point.
That's just the best thing about doing this show, because we'll always get parents that call in and tell us their success stories and how they did it. And that was the nicest, most succinct example I can think of.
Yeah.
I say you go.
Yeah.
That is great.
Let's go back to some calls. Let's go to Mark from Kansas City, Missouri. Mark, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, great topic, by the way.
Thank you, Mark.
I'm 42. I'm newly married, but I don't have any kids. So, but the point I wanted to make, and I'm not around, younger people, but when you're talking about young men and what can be important for their self-worth, for me, athletics played such a major role, and I had, and I was taught to work hard and be part of a team. And, and not everybody's, you're not, and most of the time you're not going to win the game. And by the time I made it to college, I was just excited to be a scholarship athlete and contributing to a team. And so what I'm wondering is, if you guys could give me some insight and your listeners about how athletics is it being introduced to young men in the same sort of way to help build them up as how I feel as big and strong as it helped us when I was younger. And because what I'm hearing a lot on this show is that there's a lot of young men into gaming and fantasy football, but is it being as emphasized to participate in the same sort of way?
That's a really broad and interesting topic. Let me say, first of all, quickly on the gaming, I think gaming really can be a communal event. When you're working with a team and interacting with that team, that actually could be a pretty positive experience. Now, that said, athletics is, as in the traditional sense, is a great thing as long as you create the right environment for that. It's great to have a competitive environment, but we're seeing such crazy things at times happen in athletics where coaching becomes much too serious at a much too early age. And not just to get a winning spirit, but just sort of an unpleasant one. And then you also see too many eruptions at games where people are acting out as if your child is in the Super Bowl or something. So as long as parents and coaches make that a good experience, a good competitive environment, I think athletics can be very helpful for people, but it sure can go wrong, too.
Noah, what's your sense of again, your peers and what kind of experiences they had in athletics? I mean, is it the same, generally positive experience that I had, or are you hearing different kinds of messages from your friends about football and basketball and everything else?
For the most part, as far as sports go, it seems most people that I know that have done it have really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it does definitely build a sort of sense of team, and it can definitely boost your ego. Now, for some people, it may do wonders. Other people, I wouldn't say it would cripple them, but sometimes they'll feel pretty dejected.
Yeah.
After, being on a losing streak or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never really participated in formal sports. I've played some street sports before. And I definitely get what the caller's talking about. That feeling of winning can definitely do a lot to help reinforce your confidence.
Yeah.
Whatnot.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to some calls here. Let's go to Nancy from Kansas City, Missouri. Nancy, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. I was concerned earlier as I was listening earlier in the hour, when somebody called in and said he had two young children, and he was concerned because everybody got a trophy.
Yes.
And I suspect that this wasn't the intent, but I didn't get a sense of any distinguishing between how old people were. Because as a former elementary physical education teacher, I think there's a big, huge difference between everybody getting a trophy when you're 5 years old and 6 years old, and everybody getting a trophy if you're 14. And when you start out, you need to have a sense of a time to learn without the total pressure of winning, time to learn about the sport. And the feeling is I get sports start so early, and some parents want things to be so competitive so early that I don't think that's a positive thing for anybody.
Yeah, I'd probably leave the trophies out early on. When my little guy was playing indoor soccer, I don't think they were very competitive. I have no idea who won.
And the kids always know who wins, even when they don't keep score. Yeah. But I was just hoping you all would emphasize that some of the things you were talking about, you're really talking about teenagers and not necessarily the young children.
Yeah. Well, I'm probably a little different on that. The other thing my son did for a while was wrestle, and he's pretty small, and he did a lot of losing.
Yeah,
wrestling. And the important thing always was in that process wasn't anything to do with who got the trophies. He was disappointed when he didn't, but it was more about whether he got out on the mat, made it through, and fought the good fight.
Yeah, my memory is a little different than Nancy's too. I can remember my sons getting clocked in a sport when they were, you know, 7, 8, 10 years old, and they get in the car afterwards and they say, "Well, did we win or not?"
Yeah.
I said, "Yes, you won today, absolutely."
Every day is a winner when you try hard.
Well, Noah, thank you for coming in. So good to see you again.
Thanks for having
me. Good luck out there, and Dr. Wes Crenshaw from Lawrence. It's always good to have you, Wes.
See you next month.
You bet. Okay. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the show, we'll talk with a KU professor about why the Ukraine seems to be torn between East and West as it deals with Russia's recent incursion. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.